The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
So did they have a Profit First Professionals network in those days already?
2 years ago, they did. Okay, so this is only going back about, well, probably now 3 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
So then the question to me was, I had a really good job that paid really well, that they didn't bug me much.
Okay.
But I knew it wasn't going to last forever. And so it was always a question of, when am I going to quit? When am I going to go do what I really want to do?
Right.
And so I was just constantly building it on the side. And then last year, work started to get not so nice. And I'm like, do I leave and go somewhere else?
Right.
Or do I leave and do what I really want? And so I said, well, what are my regrets going to be? And if I stayed 5 more years in the industry, at which point I would never have to worry about money again.
Okay.
But then I said, but then if I build this, because I still was going to do something. I used to want to retire and go sit on a beach and drink Mai Tais. That's gone
from
my-
You can only do that. Yeah. I mean, how many Mai Tais can you drink?
Exactly.
You know, how much golf can you play?
So all of that was gone. I was like, I want to go do something fun, learn, and give back. And I was like, if I wait 5 more years and this business takes off, I'm going to regret that I wasted 5 years. And so I was like, I'm done. I'm doing it. I went and I investigated other groups besides Mike's to see what were their philosophies, how do they do things. And I just, Mike and I are on the same wavelength. We have the same values. And all the principles that he talks about in Profit First, I've been doing since I was 21.
Right. So this sound like
not
you were, right?
New to me. It was like I could do this myself and I could build it myself. But I realized if I partnered with Mike, I could have all his material and I wouldn't have to rebuild the wheel.
Right.
Just hand me the wheel and now I could go execute. So
the information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Rocky Lalvani. I serve as the Chief Profitability Officer. I help businesses implement the Profit First methodology so they always have great cash flow and the profit to live the life of their dreams.
All right, Rocky. So thanks for joining me on the podcast. We had met through, you reminded me, PodMax Global, right? Which is something that we would definitely recommend to people who want to get into guesting, or if they have a podcast, they're looking to be a host and interview people. It's a really good way to connect. And there were some great people on that day, right?
They were. Always meet some awesome people.
You've done it several times?
I think that was my third time on.
Okay.
And, you know, it's always great when you can meet Jordan Harbinger and learn a little bit more about
that
social
spectacular.
Capital.
Yeah. Now, some of them you did in person then, right? Because they haven't been virtual forever just with coronavirus, right?
It used to be in person in Jersey.
Okay.
But then coronavirus, they ended up going virtual. I have not been to the in-person ones.
Oh, yours were all virtual. Okay.
Mine were all virtual.
Oh, so they've done a bunch during coronavirus. Okay.
They're running them about every 2 months, which is pretty frequent.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know when this episode will come out, but the next one from when we're recording this. So it's September 4th today, right?
Yes.
Next one is October 16th, but I'm sure even if this comes out after that, which it will, there'll be another one coming up, you know, in December or January or something like that. So people should look it up. Just do a search for Podmax Global, and it's a good way to get involved in the guesting industry. I speak on that all the time. I'm a big proponent of, you know, using podcasts to promote to become a thought leader and to create content that you can then share and, you know, stuff like that. So you know that I'm a big Mike Michalowicz fan. If you could have a man crush on him, it probably would count. And Mike's going to laugh when he hears this. But and Mike came on the podcast early August. It's coming out soon. But it was like during we had a major hurricane come through here. And Mike had lost all his power because he lives out in Booton. And he somehow managed to get to his office that had a little bit of power. And he was on a cell phone. And I was like, Mike, don't you like need to take care of your house? No, we're doing this. So he gave me half an hour. And I didn't even have him record an intro because I didn't want to lose time of the only half an hour that he was giving me. So, and one of his pumpkin plan specialists is in my networking group, my Wednesday morning networking group, Susanna. So that was how we got connected with him. So, all right, but Rocky, we're here to tell your story. So let's go back to, you know, where you grew up and what your background is and kind of how it evolved to, you know, the work you do now. Where are you from originally?
So I was born in India. My parents immigrated here when I was a young kid. They were in their early 40s, and it was their second time starting life over.
Okay.
And
why was it their second time?
So where they used to live originally at the end of World War II, they kind of separated up countries. And so they were like, hey, you got to go. So they had to relocate to a different part of India at that time. So they, you know, I guess it was the late 40s.
Okay.
That they immigrated
there. World War II ended, what, 45, late 44, 45, right?
Yeah. And so they, at that point, they were probably around 20.
Right. And that wasn't by choice. So
that was not by choice. It's either you go or you convert your religion and you live this way. So, yeah, it was a pretty brutal separation in the sense that trains going both directions would show up in stations where everyone was slaughtered on the train as coming in. So it was a brutal time. I mean, World War II was not.
I was just watching a documentary on the war. Something like 60, 65 million people died during World War II worldwide. I mean, that's unbelievable.
It is.
Even today, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
I was just reading a book from Andy Andrews about how do 11 million people die. And he was talking about Germany.
Right.
But what he talked about and what I don't think people realize is 11 million people died. Many of them weren't Jewish.
Right. Well, only 6 million of them were Jewish. Everybody. There was another 5 or 6 million that were just gypsies and civilians. And look, 27 million Russians died. Stalin was a dictator. He killed a lot of people. He was a bad guy. But a lot of those 27 million were civilians.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't downplay it. I'm Jewish. I mean, it's a big part of my culture, my life. And we lost a lot of relatives, probably some of which were mine. But I don't think people realize the gravity of what was going on in the world at the time. And if those people hadn't died, we would be living like, what's that series, Man in the High Castle? There's some series out there that it's as if the Nazis had won the war, what would the world be like? It's on HBO or something like that. And that's what would have happened if the Russians hadn't, because we didn't come in till late. America basically ignored the whole thing and didn't want to be involved, which is not good, and watched Russia get slaughtered. So, yeah, not a good time, but I could imagine what was going on in India, you know?
Well, that was the end of British rule.
Right.
So the British had ruled India, and they wanted out, and they just hightailed it, and they said,
factions fight, right?
Let them fight.
Yeah.
And let them go. And so my parents started over, and then at some point they decided that they wanted to enjoy the American dream, and they immigrated to the United States. At that time, though, there were currency restrictions, so they were only allowed to take $25 U.S. out.
So shirt on their back, basically.
Shirt on their back. You come
and
you, up.
You're so young. You don't remember. You don't remember any of this.
I don't remember. All I remember is we started on the wrong side of the tracks. Right. Okay. We lived in not so nice places. I think when I was about 3 or 4, we lived in one of the places we lived was East Orange.
Yeah.
And it was a very different place. I don't know what East Orange is like today.
It's still not great. There's new developments going on now and things like that, but it's not the place you'd probably walk the streets at night, you know?
And it was a lot different in the late 60s in the middle of the riots. Just happened.
Yeah. People don't realize that like Plainfield was like a bedroom community to New York. You would go downtown with your girlfriend or your wife in Newark and go mm-hmm. out at night and go to the club. And then the riots happened for obvious reasons, kind of like what's happening now. And just destroyed these cities. And yeah, that's what happened to East Orange and Irvington and all these different places that haven't recovered. East Orange a little bit better, but yeah, I could imagine what it was like. But your parents had to go to a place they could afford to live.
Yes.
And people that would accept them. They were foreigners, right? Did they speak English?
Yeah. They did, because India was ruled by the British rule. So right. Everyone that speaks English well, at least educated people.
Right.
So that wasn't a concern, but the degrees they had didn't really apply here for certain
all
things.
All of a sudden, they're bottom of the list now, right?
Yeah. So my dad went back to college part-time. My mom went to work.
Do you remember what your parents' training was in India?
So my mom was a math teacher and a school teacher. She was able to come here and do that in a Catholic school.
My dad, they
used to own a pharmacy in India. So he was kind of, but his pharmacy stuff did not transfer over to the United States.
Right. He didn't have a pharmacy license he could bring with him.
Correct. Right, so he kind of have to go in rules. A different direction.
Yeah. Now maybe that's different, right? You may be a pharmacist in India and come work here. I don't know. And just apply and whatever. Right. But that was different time.
Different times.
Right. Okay.
So they essentially started over, but very quickly, everyone around that community that came over started building wealth and going up the economic ladder.
Well, and they were educated, right? They had education. So
they were educated.
Yeah.
But the big thing I think is they were always having conversations around money. So they would talk about how much they were making, how much they were spending, what kind of deals were they getting, how were they figuring out.
They were conscious of it.
They were conscious of it.
Now, I'm curious, Rocky, you're coming from the other side of the world on the east, in Eastern Asian Pacific Rim, whatever. How do you end up in New Jersey? Just like, let's go to the other side of the United States. And how do you end up in New Jersey?
So when we first showed up, in Jersey. My mom's sister was in Jersey. My dad's brother was in Chicago. So we did spend a short time on the wrong side of the tracks in Chicago, came back to Jersey.
South side of Chicago. I'm sure it wasn't then either, right?
No.
No.
Came back to Jersey, and then they pretty much stayed in Jersey for the rest of their lives until I ran away because cost of living was ridiculous, quality of life.
You didn't go that far.
I didn't go far. I just got far enough away.
Pennsylvania, the cost of living is ridiculously different. It's nuts. New Jersey it's crazy. I mean, look, I love New Jersey and everything. I don't see myself retiring here. It's just the cost of living is ridiculous. It shouldn't be this expensive, I think. I don't know.
So when I left, my mortgage and taxes were equal to taxes in Jersey.
The whole thing.
On a house. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's craziness. It's a little hard to not do that a lot. Look, there's a lot of people that moved out to Bucks County, whatever, even when they're commuting to the city.
Mm-hmm.
So you ever work in the city commuting from there? Or no, you're always working out.
I never worked in the city. So by the time I finished college, New York was just turning around.
Okay.
Because when did Giuliani come in?
Yeah, that's when things started getting cleaned up. That was probably the mid 80s.
So that's
early 80s, maybe I'm thinking. There was just a big piece. Netflix did a thing on Fear City. They talked about all the mob and everything that went on in New York and how Giuliani turned around. It might have been the mid 80s. Yeah.
Probably mid 80s. So that was about the time that I got out of
school at the time. Yeah.
College. And I had no desire to go into the city. I never worked in the city. I did work throughout North Jersey, all the different areas throughout North Jersey.
What'd you do? What was your background?
Originally, when I got out, I went to work for a company called Dictaphone.
Sure.
And so back in the day,
the older lawyers know what Dictaphone is.
The older lawyers, right? you had secretaries.
Yeah.
nobody actually typed like that. You wouldn't waste your time typing.
Right.
And so back then it was really lucrative. And I did that to start off. And then after a while I left that and I went to medical.
And then didn't the law firms even just lease the equipment? Like it was like they had a monthly subscription and they had all these machines. I used to see these law firms where the women have these headsets, right? Mostly mm-hmm. women. Maybe there were some men then, but not in those days. So they had their little headset and they had a little pedal underneath their desk. So
yes.
Because their hands were typing, so they couldn't stop mm-hmm. the tape and everything, right? And they would go through it and they, yeah. And the attorneys would have the little machines and they would talk their stuff in there, which I could never get a knack for. Better at typing. That's what happened. Keyboarding killed the business, you know.
It keyboarding and the fact that they did away with secretaries.
Right.
So you no longer had anybody to help you do this.
Yeah, you were typing your own stuff.
You were typing your own stuff, which is really not smart.
No. Well, it's not an efficient use of your time.
Correct. It's
some of the bigger firms went to secretarial pools for a while, and you would just like send your thing out, but you'd still have to kind of write it. I don't know. It wasn't very – the funny thing is I think now I'm probably more efficient because, first of all, I don't have those skills, right, to dictate. And if I'm doing contracts, I don't start with a white piece of paper, a blank screen.
No.
You don't make contracts like that. So you're cutting and pasting and moving and doing those kind of stuff. But some of the attorneys I know that are 70, 80 years old and unfortunately still practicing like most of us, they don't do it that way. They dictaphone and then, and then the secretary will type it. Now, some of the older attorneys who have gotten a little bit better with technology now, I know what they do is they will talk to their phone, right? Mm-hmm. Their phone will translate it into like an email and they'll send it to their secretary. Secretary will cut and paste it, put it in, clean it up, give it to the guy back. He marks it up and then she finishes the whole thing.
So I've started doing that. I've gone back. There's a little recorder that's part of Windows 10.
Yeah, that translates for you, right?
That translate. And I just hit it and I just start talking and it creates my stuff. And then I
go back. Was it like a dock station? Like the recorder goes into the dock station that loads
into
the computer?
No, it's software.
It's connected. It's like Dragon.
It's like Dragon, but it's built into Windows 10.
Oh, there's a voice piece in Windows 10?
There is. It's speech recognition. And you turn it on and you just talk to your computer.
So you don't need to buy like Dragon. It's in there.
No. This is much faster.
Oh,
you just have to. You just have to learn the handful of commands.
Yeah, you got to get used to. Look, dictaphone was the same thing, right? You would say end paragraph, new paragraph, right? You'd learn that language.
So for here, it's period, which ends your sentence, and it'll automatically capitalize, and then you say shift enter. So shift enter essentially hits the enter button.
Okay, perfect.
You only need two or three words, and then it goes through, it figures it out, and then you can go back and clean it up. Yeah, but I can talk 10 times faster than I can type.
Right. You think faster that way too, yeah.
Plus, I don't miss my words. So when I type, I think so fast I miss words.
That's very common. And then you know what happens? When you read it, the word appears in your mind because your mind thinks the word should be there.
And then when everyone else reads it, they go, who the hell is this gibberish guy?
Right, exactly. Where's all the pronouns?
Yeah, where's like all this stuff? That's because... That's why I'm a podcaster instead of a blogger.
I am not a blogger. For that, I'm writing a book right now with a friend of mine, 10 Ways to Get Sued by Anyone and Everyone. It's about, you know, what I do on the business side, drafting and thing. If it wasn't for Barry doing this with me, it would never have gotten – it's already like pulling teeth. But with him,
oh yeah,
I'll get it done. I'm not.
I got a book done too, but someone else is writing it.
Right, of course. You dictated it,
I gave them all the concepts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they're working on
it's
making
good
it
for us,
reasonable.
Right? It is. It's good for us. Okay, I'm sorry. So let's go back
That's
to your
okay.
story. So it's a good story.
So over time, like by the time I was a teenager, most of the people around us had built wealth. They had moved to the nice neighborhoods. They were living in, you know, what we now call McMansions.
Yep.
My mom had passed away when I was young, though. So my dad was a single dad. He made choices of saying, I'd rather be with my son than work hard, like never be there.
Right.
So he made that choice.
And what was his business at that time? What did he do?
He worked for a company. He was very risk adverse. And so he figured out how to live without spending a fortune.
Right.
Kind of like the principles we're talking about later with Mike. It's the same concept. So while he never made a ton of money, he still lived a decent life. We, as kids, just me, we would travel all over the world. I'd been back to India a few times, been to London many times, been all over the place. You can do a lot with very little if you have that mentality.
Yep. There's no
question. The problem is most people don't have that mentality.
No, and life just begs them to spend money and they can't control themselves.
Correct.
You know, that's the job of the marketer, right? Suck you in and clean your pockets. I mean, that's not always a bad thing, but it's just like in the 60s, right? When we were kids, in the 70s, there wasn't this much screaming at you to spend money on a constant electronic. I was on a Zoom call yesterday with some people. We were talking about, you know how you go like, what do they call it? Retargeting. So you go to a website, yeah. You're looking for a mattress for you and your wife, right? Which I Correct. Did recently. Then for the next 6 months, every website you go on, there's an ad for a mattress. Well, these people were on Zoom. He tells me that this is what happens. They were talking about like men's shoes, like Allen Edmonds shoes or something. The next day, everybody on that Zoom call got ads for Allen Edmonds shoes. I have no idea. I don't even want to know how that happened, because they weren't searching anything. They were just talking about it. You think there's crawlers out there that are picking up what we're talking about right now?
Where are the servers for this again?
This was on Zoom.
I know. Where are the servers for Zoom?
No idea.
Do you remember
Russia?
What happened?
I have no idea.
When coronavirus hit and everyone went to Zoom, one of the biggest problems that came up front is a lot of the servers are in China. They were worried about, like, they have made considerable improvements to Zoom.
Right.
To security. But
right.
Bottom line.
Are the servers still there?
They may be. I think you get to pick and choose. But here's my question to you. If you can get on Zoom for free and they're giving you something for free.
They got to make money somehow.
So where is the money being made?
Yeah. So there's probably an algorithm or software that picks up words that your keywords and ties it to you because they have you in the system. You're logged in, right? Our names are on the screen. That is kind of frightening, though. We could do a whole nother episode with technology people on the call and figure out if the NSA is all listening to us, you know. Ignorance is bliss. So go ahead. So we were talking about some good stuff.
Oh, so yeah, I got out. I went to college. I followed the American dream.
Yeah.
And because I had had good money principles, as soon as I got out of college, the first thing I did with my first job was set up a whole bunch of automated savings. So I get my paycheck at Dictaphone. Part of it went to buy Pitney Bowes stock. They had the stock plan. Part of it went to their credit union. Okay. Part of it went to the 401k. Whatever got home in my paycheck, my dad had opened a T. Rowe Price account for me when I was still a kid. And so I just set up automatic savings going into mutual funds. So All of this money was just automatically being
saved. Right. Out of sight, out of mind. You didn't
out of sight,
touch it.
Out of mind.
That's a good way to do things, automated, right?
Over time, I just kept increasing the amounts that I was saving. If I took out a loan and I was done paying my auto loan, I'd increase my savings by the auto loan amount. Right?
Yeah, you just paid yourself.
I paid myself. And I just kept, every time I got raises, and I would just keep cranking up those levers. And over time, I built wealth. And so that was kind of, I mean, it's simple. It's easy. Most people just won't do it.
Right.
And it's very incredible.
Hard, yeah. Right.
But it works. And then I chased the American dream only to realize after getting all the money and all the stuff that all this crap just wasn't worth it. It just held you down. Then we started paying people to come into our house, clean out all our crap and get rid of it. Like, just take all this crap out, because it creates so much in the way of obligation.
Right.
Doesn't create happiness at all. And so then I went on a chase of like, what do I really want to do? What's really important to me? And that was kind of the next phase of life.
Were you still working at Pitney Bowes, or did you leave?
No, that was long. Like, I left Pitney Bowes because Dictaphone pretty much disappeared.
Right.
I saw that coming.
So that division was gone.
That division was gone. I ended up in medical. Okay. And then where I was in medical was in testing devices. And then that industry got commoditized. So then I hopped over to the drug industry, and the drug industry's gone through a million changes.
Right.
I think the biggest point, so when I got out of college, everyone was like, yeah, you go to work for a company, you work for them for 30 years, don't job hop. That was the advice I was given, which was for the last generation.
Yeah, no, it wasn't right. People were starting to job hop, and they didn't. Yeah, you want to get ahead, you got to move.
You got to move. And so now that you say that like it's nothing, but back then, if you started doing that, people look down at you.
It didn't, right. It didn't fail around a resume. Now it's like common. It's not that odd to see. As a matter of fact, if you're with one company for the whole time, people are like, why did you stay there the whole time? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What were you in finance, those companies?
No, I was actually in sales. The whole time I was in sales, and the majority, probably the last 20 years, I was in the pharma side, mostly in oncology, so selling the high-ticket drugs.
Got it. Okay. So you're on the road, like you got territories and
territory. Like no, the road meaning a small circle around my house.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. You're not flying around the country.
No, I'm not. I'm home every night for dinner.
Got it. Okay. All right. So what happened after the pharmaceutical industry?
So I knew that this was a long declining slide. We right. knew that it was going to end at some point. In the meantime, I had built my wealth, and then it started the conversation of what do I really want to do? And what do I really want to do? So when I got out of school, I wanted to go into finance. I already knew how to use spreadsheets back in the days of VisiCalc, which was the first spreadsheet that was out there.
Right.
I love spreadsheets. It's my life. Even when I was in college, I was working for big companies. I was teaching people how to use spreadsheets. I was creating spreadsheets. I got out of college. I was like, I could teach people how to use spreadsheets, but I had no idea how to market that skill. There was no internet. We couldn't put up an ad, right?
Right.
How do you go to big companies and say,
right.
yeah, I know how to build Excel sheets. PCs were just coming about.
Yeah.
Like it still wasn't. I was also a money guy. So I was the kid reading the Wall Street Journal, but I didn't want to go work for any of the big brokers because all they wanted you to do was sell crap to people.
Right.
It's like, I can't sell my friends this crap. It's horrible.
Right.
So I went a different direction. So come back now to probably 7, 8, 9 years ago, it's like, hey, what are the things that I'm still good at that I enjoy that the world now values? One of them is understanding spreadsheets and numbers.
Right.
And the other thing is understanding finances. And I finally found a way that I could do this, which was financial coaching. And okay. So I started financial coaching. I did it on the side, went down, spent time with Dave Ramsey.
Sure.
Learn their coaching program, their systems, quickly realized I didn't want to deal with broke people. Also realized there's lots of people who make 6 figures and still are struggling.
Of course.
And so I was kind of focused on them and then not just on the money, but then how do you create the life of your dreams?
Right.
So as I'm kind of learning how to do this, I'm kind of sharing it and teaching people. And then the last pivot came a few years ago when someone had said, have you read Profit First? And right. they introduced me to Mike. And I was like, what do you mean business owners don't look at their financials? What do you mean they don't look at their reports? What do you mean they don't look at their
financial
statements?
That doesn't make any sense to you, right?
Makes zero sense. It was like, for me, it was mind blowing. I was right. like, you're kidding me. Business owners don't understand the business of business.
Well, it's like, you know, it surprised me when I was young to find that families with young children, like they don't have a will. They don't have their things, you know. Mm. What happens if you die? What are your little kids going to do? You know, they don't have that stuff. People are just very good at neglecting the things that they, yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
So when I realized that, I was like, gold mine, my skill sets, value in the marketplace and the marketplace is willing to pay. Now, so
did they have a Profit First Professionals network in those days already?
2 years ago, they did. Okay, so this is only going back about, well, probably now 3 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
So then the question to me was, I had a really good job that paid really well, that they didn't bug me much.
Okay.
But I knew it wasn't going to last forever. And so it was always a question of, when am I going to quit? When am I going to go do what I really want to do?
Right.
And so I was just constantly building it on the side. And then last year, work started to get not so nice. And I'm like, do I leave and go somewhere else?
Right.
Or do I leave and do what I really want? And so I said, well, what are my regrets going to be? And if I stayed 5 more years in the industry, at which point I would never have to worry about money again.
Okay.
But then I said, but then if I build this, because I still was going to do something. I used to want to retire and go sit on a beach and drink Mai Tais. That's gone
from
my- You
can only do that. Yeah. I mean, how many Mai Tais can you drink?
Exactly.
You know, how much golf can you play?
So all of that was gone. I was like, I want to go do something fun, learn, and give back. And I was like, if I wait 5 more years and this business takes off, I'm going to regret that I wasted 5 years. And so I was like, I'm done. I'm doing it. I went and I investigated other groups besides Mike's to see what were their philosophies. How do they do things? And I just, Mike and I are on the same wavelength. We have the same values. And all the principles that he talks about in Profit First, I've been doing since I was 21.
Right. So sound like you were, right?
New to me. It was like I could do this myself and I could build it myself, but I realized if I partnered with Mike, I could have all his material and I wouldn't have to rebuild the wheel.
Right.
Just hand me the wheel and now I could go execute. So I was like, this is a perfect partner.
Plus you're part of a community that's selling this, the concepts and the books and the this and the that and sharing ideas together and you're not
exactly.
alone.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm not alone.
And he licenses that out, right? He does not run the Profit First Professionals group, which I think is smart. He doesn't do that for Pumpkin Plan. You know, because he's spread thin as it is.
Right. You know? He is. So Ron Seharian runs Profit First mostly. And Mike is very involved with Profit
First.
I'm
sure he is. Yeah.
He hasn't let that go. But they do have a wonderful community and they provided everything I needed. It was already in line with my values and how I believe things should get done. And then it was just a matter of implementing and rolling. And so that's where I'm at. And then I've been learning a lot about certain industries that are more prone to need help. So one of them is the legal industry, because from what I understand, if you ask a lawyer why he went to law school, it's because I don't know how to do math. And there's no math in law school. So that's kind
very
of like-
Very little.
Tax. Very little.
There's math in tax. If you take like a tax course, estate planning, yeah.
But the point is, here you have, and the same thing's true for doctors, both of these groups have high expectations from society for living life.
Right.
They don't know how to run their money. And even though they make a high income, they can't seem to keep it. So they're perfect groups for me to help. Creatives are also very much the same way. Creatives, you know, they spend all their time on their other side of their brain, not the number side of the brain.
Right. Well, that's why they're creatives.
That's why they're creative. So they're, right. That whole group kind of, those are the groups that I tend to focus on. And then real estate. As much as people think that real estate people understand the numbers, most of them don't.
Right.
They don't run the numbers. They don't keep track of the numbers.
They kind of do things from a feel, like a gut, you know. Well, I think, yeah, we can make money doing this, but they don't really get sharp with the numbers. You know, one of the problems with lawyers, unlike doctors, so doctors have more cash flow generally, right? Which can hide a lot of problems. With lawyers, we don't have, there's no insurance system that pays people. I mean, there's Legal Shield, stuff like that, but that's not much. So you don't really have that where you accept insurance from people when they come to your office. And lawyers, I guess doctors are the same way. We get no business training in law school. It's the one thing that's left out of law school. I mean, I was talking to an attorney the other day. We spent 3 years learning how to like research cases and argue cases and read briefs and write stuff. We could do that for a year and spend 2 years learning how to run a law practice. And 80% of us in the country, there's like 1.4 million attorneys active in the United States. 80% of us end up in one or two man practices eventually. So if you don't know how to do business and run your business from a financial standpoint, from a business standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, you're going to have a lot of trouble. It's just the reality of it.
And that's the bottom line. So you need somebody on your team, whether it's a position that you play a couple times a month,
right?
Or if you don't want to do it, you need somebody on your team who essentially sits in as the chief profitability officer.
Right.
So there's two types. So even CFOs struggle with this, right? Someone might be a CFO, but they don't understand truly what a CFO's job is.
Right.
Most businesses, all right, when you look at a business, 30 to 40% of that business is unprofitable, but they don't know where that unprofitability is coming. So in the legal business, right, you might take on a client, you might spend 100 hours on them.
Right.
But only get like $2,000. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Like, yeah,
you're not measuring it.
You're not measuring it. And so when you look at that, it's like, wait a minute, why are you doing these tasks that are essentially unprofitable? Whereas if you notice, hey, did you notice that this 10% or 20%, maybe 30% of what you're doing in your law practice is generating maximum profits.
Right.
And so maybe we should focus your practice on the things that are generating maximum profit and then refer out all the non-productive work to somebody else. Let them suck it up and
right.
work yeah. for next to nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
And to a certain extent, that gets into Mike's pumpkin plan book about cutting back the fat and
yeah.
focusing on your ideal client, your core market. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. You talk to people, I'm sure you do all the time. They'll tell you who they do business with. Oh, I can do business with anybody. I go, yeah, that's nobody. You can do business with anybody. So if you got a call from somebody who says, hey, I read about Profit First. They referred me to you as Profit First professional. You're not going to necessarily turn them away if they don't fit your three criteria, but you're not going to spend your time developing business in just a haphazard way. You got to focus.
You have to focus.
Right.
And so that's a big part of it. And then the second part of what I do is I look at expenses. And what we find is there's a certain amount of expenses that are truly necessary. There are some expenses that are needed, but you can get for a fraction of the cost.
Right. They're not managed well.
They're not managed well. Right. And then there are some expenses, like the lawyer's BMW that's billed to the company, that's a vanity item.
Right. Which is fine. Yeah, it's fine if that's what you want, but just recognize what it is.
Recognize it. Well, and right. they also go, oh, I need a nice office. I need this fancy stuff.
Well, that went out the window now. No, exactly. But you could do a backdrop. Look at my nice office. It's not real.
You've got a beautiful office.
Yeah, mine's, it's all fake.
And that's the reality of it. In today's world, and even in the old world, I think we think certain things, but they aren't true.
Right.
Like when you go to pick an attorney, do you care about his address? Do you care that he drives a fancy car?
No, you care if he's a good attorney and he can do for you what you want to do.
And so all the things that you think you need, you don't necessarily need. But society's told you that you're not really a good attorney if you're not driving a fancy car in a fancy office.
Right.
But that's not true.
You know why? Because I'm watching it right now. Suits, it's the series with Meghan Markle, who's now Harry's wife. And it was like 9 seasons. It's all about high-powered lawyers. And they, the senior partners have these gorgeous offices. I mean, it's ridiculous. And people do. They get that impression of that's law. But like I said, 80, 90% of it, not the case.
Not the case. So we're told stories. And that's why you have to constantly question the stories and ask yourself. And that's one of the exercises we go through. Go down every line of spending. And say, do I really need to spend this? Is this something I have to have, but I can get for less? Or is this a vanity spend?
Right. Why? You got to ask the why question. Right. And it's okay. It's okay. But don't expect yourself to move forward if you're spending the money now without building any kind of foundation or wealth or anything like that. You know?
Correct. Once you build a foundation, you can go have what you want. I'm not telling you not to buy fancy things. I have lots of fancy things.
Right.
I spend a lot on different things.
Yeah, but you're saying if you want a BMW, buy an office building or an apartment building that produces income for yourself that pays the payment for the BMW. That's a much better use of your money.
It is. It is a much better use of your money.
Right. But you've got to think holistically a little bit, right?
You do. You very much do.
Okay.
Create shared office space for the legal industry.
Well,
right?
That's going to be big now. I'm in a co-working space myself. I don't have a permanent office. I don't have to pay for internet. I just pay one fee. It's all taken care of, you know?
And I think more and more that's what you're going to see in the world is as you niche down and as you want to start dealing with people instead of brands, I think that's going to be much, much more important in the future. And the reality is if you don't have all that overhead, your costs are not like those big law firms.
Right. I'm able to compete even more so than when I had a small firm, because we had overhead in those days. Now my overhead's very little. So people come in, they don't care that I'm in a co-working space. First of all, most of them don't come in, but if they do, they come in, they sign some documents, we grab a conference room, we're good. We meet outside. Yeah. I don't know. Now we can't meet inside anyway. So yeah, I think people's perceptions, it's a different generation, right? Nobody cares. They all know about WeWorks. They expect startup companies and tech companies all to be in co-working shared spaces. And you saw that for a while in law firms, even bigger firms, which they're creating like open space concepts and huddle. Now they have to change it back a little bit, but huddle rooms, and you wouldn't necessarily have your own office, but if you need to use a phone, you can use a small conference room that has a phone and talk that way, because it's a waste of space. When I first designed my office, my old office that I broke up last summer, the architect comes back. It was like, say, 3,000 square feet. It wasn't a big space. He comes back and there's like six offices, the big offices. And I looked at him. I'm like, I don't want to get, I mean, I'm an attorney. I got a COO. So I'm going to get three other people in this space. Are you kidding me? So we ended up getting 15 at the end of the day. And part of it was a shared space with an investment company that later moved out. So nobody needs, 10 by 12 was fine. We need 20 by 30 offices to do what? You know, so it's just not a good efficient use of space. But the architect was older and he was just like, no, this is, everybody wants a big office. I go, what the hell if it's not putting money in my pocket, it's just expense, like you said. And then it's not even the BMW. At least you feel good driving around the BMW. How good do you feel about a big office that nobody sees? I don't.
Well, you feel good in the BMW the day you drive it off the lot. But three years later, when it's dinged up and you're still making payments.
Right.
You're not feeling good anymore.
Yeah, not
you're
so
like,
good.
You got the crappy.
You're like, I got to get a new car. And then you go spending more money on another car. You know, the lease is up and you just keep rolling it. I was with a guy once. We went to lunch. He had a 740 BMW. It was a new car. And I was like, oh, it was very nice. He goes, yeah, my CPA said I could get it. I'm like, what? Well, my CPA said I needed a tax deduction. I said, you know, that doesn't make it free, right? And he's like, what do you mean? Like, he didn't get it. And I'm like, well, maybe your CPA shouldn't have given you permission to get expensive car.
So do you understand why the CPA is doing that?
Yeah, because he's looking at the bottom line. He wants to show less taxes being paid.
Correct.
It makes him look like he's doing his job better.
Correct.
Yeah.
The reality
is, that's his focus. That's what he's trained to do. You know,
you should pay more taxes.
Right.
Because it means you have more profit.
Yeah.
And then you need to remove that profit from your business and put it somewhere else and let it grow in a different way.
Right.
So that when one part of your business gets hit, you've got six other flows of cash coming in that you don't have to worry.
Right.
And that's how you build wealth. CPAs don't know how to build wealth. They know how to cut taxes.
And they know
which
how to
is
do
real
the
nice.
Bookkeeping, right. Yeah. And look, you can look at things and say, I'm upset I'm paying taxes. I said, well, the alternative to that is not having income. So don't complain, you know?
And along those same lines, what's the BMW guy saying? Hey, buy this BMW because you'll save on taxes.
Right. Do it.
And then
the
tax guy's saying, hey, buy this BMW, you save on taxes. They're in cahoots.
Yep.
You know, yeah. I mean, not literally, but.
No, but they don't know any better. That's their whole mantra.
That's their whole mantra. And I know for a while there was these big tax deductions if you bought a truck. So everyone was running around buying
the weight of a vehicle. You had to write off the whole, you had to pay cash. You had to write off the whole thing up front, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So go buy a Suburban so you can save on taxes. Never mind. You just wrote a $70,000 check.
And probably are burning more gas in a block than used to be burning and bad for the environment, the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, look, it's all driven by taxes. Everybody's like, I want to pay less taxes. Okay. But what are you giving up for that? You know?
I will tell you a simpler solution to pay less taxes. Just pay me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'll make you feel good. I'll take all your money and I'll give you a 30%.
I can do that too, by the way. People can pay me. Just give me their money.
Just give me the money.
Yeah.
And then your tax bill will be lower.
Right.
And once a year, I'll take you on a trip somewhere just as a thank you.
Yeah.
So not save on taxes. You get a free trip out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. So you've been with Mike like 3 years now, right?
I've been with Mike for 1 year.
Okay.
So when I left the company is when I officially signed up with Mike and went full bore with him. So I was, before I went official with Mike, I was still doing a lot of the work, same principles, but I wasn't branded. Now I'm branded under him and helping people achieve it more direct.
Okay. So since we're talking about it, I know what it is and you know what it is, obviously more so than I do. Why don't we talk about some of the things that some of the advice that you give people and Profit First and why they should read the book and how they can interact with you. But let's talk about some advice for small business owners.
So the first thing is, right, we were just talking about taxes, right? Everyone is looking at it wrong. So your CPA has another equation that's absolutely wrong. And that equation is sales minus expenses equals profit, right? And so what's your CPA doing? He's going, let's drive up those expenses so that we can save on taxes.
Right.
Where is profit? It's last in the equation. It's a leftover. It's crumbs. The end of the year, you go to your accountant. He goes, congratulations, you did make a profit last year. Here's how much you made. This is what your tax bill is. First question is, where are those profits? He just laughs at you. Goes, right. Oh, you spent it on that Suburban.
Paper.
Yeah, well, it was all paper.
Spent on things that were not deductible.
Sent on stuff and you gave it away. Mike said, Mike understood this because he made these mistakes. So he said, I need a better equation. And so he said, sales minus profit equals expenses. And so you take
yourself
the
first.
Profits up front. You pay yourself. This is not a new concept.
No.
Dave Ramsey does the same thing. I think it was Larry Burkett before that. You know, richest man in Babylon before that. Like, this goes back. These are timeless principles.
Right.
So if you do sales minus profit equals expenses and you pay yourself first and you take your profit first, it just changes your whole mentality and how you look at things.
Yeah, because we tend to raise our expense level up to what's available. So if you take
right.
it off the table, not it's kind of like what happened with you, right? Because you set it up automatically where there wasn't as much available. It was just out of sight, out of mind.
Correct.
And it worked.
And it worked. And so I've been living them. So that comes back to what's known as Parkinson's Law. And Parkinson's Law just yep. basically states that you will use up all the resources given to you. Which, you know, we're coming up on a long weekend. People are going to go sit down in front of the TV with a bag of chips. And the next thing you know, the bag of chips is gone.
Yep.
You ate it all, right? Because it's just there. You don't think about it. Same thing happens with your bank account. If you've got this big bank account and there's all this money in there, business owners tend to spend it all. What they don't realize is, wait a minute, I forgot to take my profit. I forgot to pay myself. I forgot I owe for taxes. I forgot about this. And then they wonder why they're struggling with cash flow. And what I try and tell most business owners is, if you have a 5% profit margin in your business, you need $20 in revenue for every additional dollar you spend. Most business owners kind of think of, oh, I have a dollar in revenue, I can spend a dollar. No.
Well, that's always gets them into trouble. They don't understand.
That's what gets them in trouble.
Right.
Yeah. So you need to understand those principles and to take things away so that when you look at your bank balance, there's less money in it. You'll naturally spend less just because there's less there. If
right.
I give you a big plate of food, you'll eat the big plate. If I give you a little plate of food, you know, you eat the little plate and more often than not, you're satisfied.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it is. And that's the way I did it, right? I took my money out up front and I still lived a wonderful life on what was left.
Right.
But in the meantime, I was building wealth. Most most business owners don't look at their financial statements. They look at their bank balance.
They don't know their numbers. Yeah.
And they don't know their numbers. But this system works for them because when they go to look at their bank balance, the only thing in the bank account is the leftover amounts, the expenses.
Right.
We set up multiple bank accounts. And when the money comes in, it immediately flows to the profit account, to your pay account, to the tax account, to all the accounts where it should go so that every job has a dollar and it's been allocated to that job. And then whatever's left is what's left for your expenses. You look at your expenses and go, okay, that's how much I have to spend. Let me figure out how to do this for less. And as you've learned, right, I can have a beautiful office with a Zoom background. You know, it costs you nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an idea of most business owners know how to be resourceful. They know how to do these things when they're forced to do them.
Right.
We just got to force them. And by putting less money in your bank account, you're forced to be more resourceful.
Yeah. Well, I think it really focuses on human psychology and the way people do things. You know, it's Murphy's Law also, right? If your expenses are going to rise up to what your resources are. And we have life, like I said before, I don't remember if we were on the mic or off, but life begs you to spend money now. I mean, begs you. It used to be TV would beg you, and now they reach right into your mind through your phone 24 hours a day, and there's ads coming up and this and that, and this is buzzing and that's dinging and this person's TikToking. And I mean, it's just everything. And as soon as there's something cool, the kids know about it right away. And it really is pandemonium when it comes to consumerism and the way it's gotten. And you can buy anything, anywhere, anytime around the world. Yeah, it was funny. I saw a comedian once. He was talking about Amazon Prime, how we need it, and how you go. And this is true. You go on Amazon, right? If it says they'll have it to you in 2 days because it doesn't ship out till the next day, you're like, 2 days? What do I need to wait 2 days to get something? I want it now. So there's going to be probably a level of Prime that's like Prime Now, where you pay a higher fee, where you can have it within 2 or 3 hours in your hand. And the comedian was joking that someday they'll have Prime Before. Where they'll send it to you before you even know that you need it or want it.
They have that now, right? So if you think of it, there's Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah.
They send you razor blades whether you need them or not, right? Then there's that whole for guys. They send you a whole trunk of clothes. Every month they send you a trunk of clothes.
Well, you send back what you want, but they're relying on the fact that you're probably going to keep more than you really need.
You will.
Yeah,
and
of course you will.
Who needs a new pair of pants every month? Who needs a new pair of underwear? I'm thinking of these guys, some of these underwear clubs. I'm like,
hounds, you know,
what do you do with 36 pair of underwear? Like,
you throw some of them out when you don't want to wash them, especially if you live in the city and you're a guy, right?
It's disposable. It's society. Absurd.
Yeah. Yeah. But look, if you're the business owner, right? If that's your business, you want a subscription-based business, a recurring revenue business where people are using up and automatically replacing and, you know, things like that.
So you know what I do? I have a CityCard credit card, and CityCard allows you to create virtual account numbers. And what happens is if I sign up for a yearly subscription,
right,
I always use my virtual number, which is only a one-time use number. And when the subscription hits again, it fails to auto pay. And then I get an email, and then I'm like, yeah, I want to still use this. And then I pay it.
So you're telling me that this card has like sub account numbers, right? Mm-hmm. That you use to sign up for this 12-month subscription. And then it's on auto charge. And then when it goes to renew, you can pick when it expires, that sub number?
The card automatically is a one-time use card. And the expiration date's always the next month.
Okay, so if it's a monthly thing, though, it's going to ding every month. But so if you're paying it for the next 12 months ahead of time.
Correct. If you're paying monthly, you have to put it on a regular credit card.
Right, but if it's 12 months, you bought 12 months up front, in a year, it's going to hit that card.
And you're going to forget in a year, right?
Right, of course. They rely on all kinds of things to go through your account. I did that one time. I went through my account. I'm like, what are these 7 things that are being charged? I couldn't figure it out. Stuff through iTunes is the worst. The kids buy little things, $1.99. You can never turn them off. You can't figure out where they're coming from. Apple's like controlling your life. You got to just stop the card.
If you have a virtual card or you just cancel your card, then everything stops because they can't charge you anymore.
Correct.
And that's what you do. That's how you force it to stop.
Yeah. And then it'll catch up with you. It'll say, this didn't go through. And you're like, what is this? You know?
Who knows?
I have, matter of fact, I'm on a monthly thing for my haircut. So they charge, but I did some legal work for them. So we had traded some stuff, but it caught up with itself this month and they went to charge my card. Well, I changed my bank like within the last 12 months. So I get this notification from the old bank saying that it's been declined. Well, there's no account. It doesn't exist. So now that's how you know about it. That's a good fail safe, right?
It is. Set up systems to automate your finances, and then you don't have to think about it.
Right. But you do want some systems that notify you later, because if you're not thinking about it, it'll keep sucking money out of your bank account.
That's you want systems that alert you and stop payments, not systems that automate payments.
Right. If it's your auto insurance, obviously you want that. You don't want that to accidentally lapse. But if it's even Amazon Prime, okay, maybe it's saving you money because you're shipping stuff to the office or whatever, but you still want to know every year that it's up for renewal and what's going on with it, you know?
But that's what happened. We got our auto insurance this year. I'm like, wow, that's expensive. I just called the, I emailed the agent and go, anything you can do to lower my rates? I got an email back in 48 hours. Yeah, we cut your rate $300.
There you go. Just had to ask.
Just had to ask.
Yeah.
Right. If I do that once a month, that's $3,600 a year. Like that adds up really, really quick.
Real quick. And then if you're smart about it, you take the 300 and you either pay down some other debt or you put it somewhere else.
You invest it.
Right.
You save it. Like, I don't understand why people don't like to save money. It's incredible.
Not fun.
No.
More fun to consume.
It is. So I'm going to let all your, there is an F word that you need to learn, which is frugal.
Yeah. Well, it's more fun to consume, but it's not fun when you're 75 years old and you can't retire because you don't have any money.
Correct.
You know,
it's not fun at all.
Right.
No, this is honestly the real outcome of all of this is freedom. Yeah. So I was able to leave a corporate job that paid really well to go do what I wanted in my early 50s because I had freedom, because I built wealth. And I'm like, man, screw you. I'm out of here.
Right. You always have that. You're not vulnerable, even if they had layoffs.
And well, they did.
The layoffs, and they said, listen, we have a big severance package. Well, you're like, I'm taking that because I can afford to do it.
They didn't even have that. Two months after I left, phones started ringing with no warning.
Wow.
Layoff. Don't have a job? Day.
Yeah.
Or, hey, here's your new territory, and your new territory is 2 hours away.
Right.
So it was brutal. I knew it was coming. You can see the dance. When you pay attention, you'll see the dance. It's always the same.
But you had the financial strength to walk away if somebody said to you, you know what, Rocky? We're sending you out to Ohio. You got to drive there every day from Harrisburg. You're like, I'm not doing that.
No.
But other people don't have a choice.
They don't. They feel stuck. So this is all about freedom. That's really what this is about. It's not about, you know, the Mai Tais on the beach or the BMW. It's about freedom.
Sure. All right. So Mike's books are already on my website, so people can get them that way. We'll put some links in the show notes.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.